Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and today I'm joined by my friend Connor Hrabchuk of the Hockey Writers Winnipeg Sports Talk, the host of the Level Flight podcast, which I think is one of the best names for a podcast out there. Thanks so much for taking the time, Connor, and doing this. And we'll talk a little bit about the Jets and their big playoff matchup against the Avalanche. But first, I just want to ask you a question that's been on my mind a lot: is what's it like covering a team that wins?
Well, first, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And yeah, this has been my first season actually covering any team. Like I covered the Manitoba Moose, the Jets AHL affiliate last season, and now this year I'm covering the Jets, and it's been a dream. Like they're the fourth best team in the league, the best Canadian team. They finished the season as the second Canadian or second best team in the West. And they're gonna have home ice for the playoffs starting in a day or two here. Like it's been unbelievable, and there's been some ups and downs, but they tied their franchise record winning streak, franchise record of wins in a season. They won the Jennings for the lowest goals against. Like this season has just been so special, and for it being my first season, it's setting a really high bar for the rest of my career.
What's maybe a moment just for you personally that stuck out or, stood out for you?
Yeah, there's so many to choose from. I will say it was pretty funny. My dad and my little brother won this thing through a season ticket holder where they got to meet a player and they didn't know who it would be. So they were waiting outside the press room after one of these games. And I was like doing the media thing, walking to the press room, and I saw them and took a photo. Like the Jets, Jonathan Kozub, the Jets photographer, took a photo of us. It's so professional. I have it hung up in my room now at the backdrop. Like that's a really cool moment. And then since they got to meet a player, Gabriel Vilardi walked out like 20 seconds later, and my little brother's eyes just like lit up. He's like, "Oh my God, so cool!" Like that. It was after like some random game in December too. Like I don't know. It's a Wednesday night game, random against a random team, and I was just like, you know what? Little things like that happen, and that was a really cool moment. But as for on ice stuff, like there's just too many to choose from because the Jets were so good.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just an unbelievable season. Are you gonna grow a playoff beard? Is that in the cards?
I don't think that's possible really, but I might try my best. It might end up being like a greasy like stubble that doesn't look good at all. But no, I think I'm gonna pass on that.
Well, hopefully for Jets fans, and I guess I'm in the media, so I can't technically be a fan, but when my team's eliminated, that's when I become a fan, I guess,
There you
of the
go.
Jets, and hopefully they'll have big burly beards by the end of this playoff ride. But they need to get through the Colorado Avalanche. Just go heading into the series, what do you think are maybe the areas for that might be consequential in terms of the differences in the series from goaltending? Like, just what do you think is like the key to this matchup for the Jets?
Well, what I've been saying this whole time when previewing this series is like the goaltending, it's not even like fair to say that it's just a goaltending advantage and just leave it at that. Like the Jets have the best goalie in the league, in the world, Connor Hellebuyck. He's going to win his second Vezina trophy. The Jets won the Jennings trophy for lowest goals against for a reason. It's Connor Hellebuyck. And you look at the Colorado Avalanche, who have Alexander Georgiev and Anunin as their backup, who might start game one. Like, I don't know. Georgiev gave up 4 goals on 15 shots when the Jets played the Avs a week ago, less than a week ago. And then Anunin came in and gave up 3 goals on, I think, another 15 shots. Like, they have really bad goaltending issues, and the Jets have that position as solved as you can of any team in the playoffs. So I think that is by far the biggest advantage that the Jets have going into the series is in net. When you look at special teams, that definitely favors Colorado. When you look at high-end talent, that definitely favors Colorado. But then you look at depth, you look at defensive structure, all those things favor the Jets. So I think it's truly a battle of like high-end talent versus like goaltending and depth, and like high-end offensive firepower versus good defensive structure. Like it's going to be such a fun series to watch because it's going to solve a lot of those questions. Like, is it better to have one $13.5 million forward that wins the heart, or is it better to have a third line that absolutely shreds every other third line? You know, like it's gonna solve a lot of like roster construction questions too, which I think is pretty fascinating in a big picture style, looking at the series. But goaltending definitely in the Jets' favor, and the defensive structure that they've played with all season long.
Do you think in many ways that the X factor is simply does Georgiev just bring solid goaltending and then the Avs rise to the challenge because they get that goaltending? It's like I don't want to boil it down to something as simple as just goalie being good, but a lot of times in the playoffs, that's really what it is.
Yeah, 100%. And I think if Georgiev does play at kind of like a league average level or even a little bit above that, I'd start to give the edge to the Avalanche in this series. Like, I still think that this series is going the distance regardless. I think it's going to be 6 or 7 games. But when you look at Georgiev and like, do you have confidence that he might cough up the first 2 games of the series and then they'll have to panic down 2-0 and go to Annan in game 3? And what if he's not great? Like, I just think that there's a lot of avenues that could happen in that sense. But yeah, that's a great question. If Georgiev plays well, and then you combine that with the high-end talent that I talked about, the Hart Trophy winner most likely and Nathan MacKinnon, I'd start to give the edge to the Avalanche in this series if they got good goaltending. But that's a big if. And hey, Nathan MacKinnon can win a series on his own, even if the goaltending isn't at that level. That's why I think that this series is going 6 or 7 for sure. Just two great teams
I
going at it.
know following your work and being on Jets Twitter and following all the writers, the Jets defensive prowess has been a subject of a lot of opinion and the lines, especially the top six, Neil Pionk. But this team did, as you mentioned, end the season as the best defensive team in the league. How much do you think that translates into a playoff setting? Just because there have been some warts with regards to Scheifele and Connor playing together, and is that something where you think in a playoff setting it might be different, or is it even more advantageous because they always say defense wins championships? And in a lot of ways, if you look at the goaltending and maybe the structure of this team, that's what the Jets have better than any other team in the league.
That's definitely what they're hoping for, is that that saying comes true that defense wins championships, because yeah, they've been the best defensive team in the league for sure. As for Connor and Scheifele, much of the discourse was around the fact that Ehlers, Scheifele, and Vilardi were together for the Jets in mid-December, and they went on a franchise record winning streak of 8 straight games, which they've now matched going into the playoffs. But at that time, that line outscored their opponents. I think it was 15-4. Their expected goals, all the analytics, like they were absolutely shredding every single team that they played against. And they were one of the best lines in the league, bar none. And then Kyle Connor came back from injury. Kyle Connor went back up on that top line. Did he come back early? I'm not sure. He didn't look himself for a good month or two, but he remained on the top line. The Jets kind of slid down. They were first in the NHL when the Ehlers, Scheifele, Vilardi combination was together. They slid down to as low as the 3 seed in the Central, and a few points back of the Avs. And then they put that line back together. They won a few games. They had a game that they really shouldn't have won in Nashville,
Yeah.
where Connor Hellebuck stood on his head. And then they broke up that line. And then going forward, they went with the trio of Connor, Scheifele, Vilardi, who have been repeatedly outscored, outchanced, you name it, at 5-on-5 this year. And the line has actually been okay since putting them back together. And another layer to that is that the second line of Ehlers, Monahan, and Toffoli has been unbelievable. So if that top line, you can get good results out of them, you're playing with fire there. And then the third line, like the Lowry line, we know that they've been dominant all season long, and that's where the depth comes from. And then Alex Iafallo and Vladislav Nemeskov and Morgan Barron are on your fourth line. Like, that's an unbelievable fourth line, and it all works if the top line works. And the top line didn't work for a good chunk of the season, but I've got to give credit to Kyle Connor. He's really turned it on here over this 8-game winning streak. I don't know if he came back too early from the knee injury or what kind of took him this long to get back up to speed. They originally said 6 to 8 weeks, and he came back in 5. I don't know. Like, maybe he was healthy enough to playing with a brace. I don't know. But he's back now, and he's scoring a lot of goals. He looks a lot more explosive. And that top line is actually breaking even in a lot of analytics. And then in goals, they're actually outscoring their opponents. They outscored the Kraken the other night. I believe it was 2-1 for
I
their
think
line.
so.
And then they
Yeah.
won the game, obviously. But when that top line clicks, the rest of the lineup just works. And then the defensive structure follows. And it's really a big question mark going into the series. Can that top line kind of hold their own against the likes of a Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen?
But when you talk about that, is that maybe the biggest reason why home ice advantage really helps them in this case is because they can match up the Lowry line, which, if you look at most analytics, are one of the two or three best lines defensively in the league against the firepower power of Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen. Is that where it might even the edge might be just in terms of the lineups? And then when they go to Colorado, that's where it becomes a bit more dicey.
I think 100%. That's why I think home ice advantage was so important. It's why on Winnipeg Sports Talk or whatever shows, we were talking about it leading up, like, hey, they need home ice for that very reason. Adam Lowry should be on Selke Trophy ballots. Like, he's been so unbelievable in his own zone this year. And that line has been, you mentioned the analytics, they're one of the best defensive lines in the league. They're a true third line, shutdown line. Rick Bonus loves to hard match that line against the other team's best. And they've won their minutes against the other team's best this year as a third line. It's truly crazy to think about how well Nino Niederreiter has meshed with Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton on that line. It's been incredible. But that line going up against Nathan MacKinnon is the number one reason why home ice advantage is important for the Jets. When they get to Colorado and the Scheifele line ices the puck and you see MacKinnon hop over the boards, like that's the advantage that the Avalanche will have in that scenario, or just when the Scheifele line is out there, they could put MacKinnon and Makar out there and try and reinstall those analytics that were so poor earlier in the season in that line. But in the Jets 7-0 win over the Avs, the top line looked okay. Like they didn't get completely shelled. The 3-0 win over Dallas, the top line didn't get completely shelled. So there's been positive steps in that regard. But I think having home ice, having Adam Lowry basically follow Nathan MacKinnon out there on the ice every time that 29 hops over the boards is going to be a huge advantage for the Jets. And they match up well, that line against MacKinnon in a shutdown role.
I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the Jets decor and really the matchup against the Avs, because if you look on paper, you'd probably say, well, the Avs are way better. Their defense is way better in many ways. Obviously, you have the two-pronged with Makar and Taves, and then obviously they added Sean Walker, and you look at the Jets and Morrissey's been unbelievable, but outside of that, you don't see a lot of high-end talent. Just what do you think maybe what are the pairings, the D pairings going into game one in your mind? What should they be? And maybe what do you think Rick Bonus will do?
Well, I think the underrated part of the decor comes, and you're a Sens guy, you'll understand it. Dylan DeMello has been in a top line role for 3 years, and he's killed it. Like him and Josh Morrissey have shredded their minutes in a top line role. He is in a lot of ways the perfect partner for Josh Morrissey. Morrissey does this thing where he just roams, and he's unbelievable when he does that. He just picks off passes and just goes, and it's like just let him do his thing basically. And DeMello is the stay at home guy that'll cover up. If the puck bounces one way or the other, and he'll make the smart defensive plays. He's been so good over his contract. He's a pending UFA. We'll see what
I
happens,
know.
but they've gotten so much value on that trading contract. It's been unbelievable. As for the rest of the decor, Brendan Dillon and Neil Pionk, they've kind of split their minutes, maybe slightly below in the analytics this year, and the goals I think are kind of even as well. So they're break even. They're kind of used as a shutdown pairing. I think Brendan Dillon also is having an amazing season at 33 years old. I think he's also a pending UFA, so he might price himself out in free agency because he's playing so well. He'll be a coveted left shot, veteran, physical defenseman. He's been great this year. And then the third pairing, Logan Stanley, 2016 first round pick, has kind of just come out of nowhere over these last 10, 15 games here. No one expected him to be in the lineup. The Jets have had really no injuries to their back end. I think actually 0 games lost of their 7 defensemen, which is remarkable. But Logan Stanley has been great over these last 10 games, and he really struggled the past couple of years. And as a first round pick, you were like, oh, well, maybe this guy's a bust. Maybe, he's not going to find it at the NHL level. And I think he's 24, 25, and
Things
kind of
that
having a 25, and he's having a resurgence here. With 10 games left in the season, he's on that third pairing with Dylan Sandberg, two big physical defensemen who are good penalty killers, and built for a playoff style. And I think Logan Stanley's won the job over these last 10, 15 games here with his play. And that third pairing, I did just say it, but they're built for the playoffs because of their size. And I think that's why Stanley maybe gets the advantage over, say, a Nate Schmidt or a Colin Miller in that role. But Dylan Sandberg, can't say enough good things about him. Maybe the second best pure defensive defenseman on the Jets, after a Dylan DeMello or a Brendan Dillon. Or Josh Morrissey. Like there's really a lot of underratedness on that blue line, if that's a word. But yeah, I like the way that they're. You asked me also what it should be. I do think it should be that, given how well Logan Stanley has played down the stretch here.
I guess with that, my question would be just it, how much of their defensive ability has been also just the structure more than the players themselves? Like you talk about the sum of the parts rather than, you know, the individuals. And do you still think that in a playoff setting with Nathan MacKinnon coming at you? You know, last year you looked at how the Jets fell off. They had a bit of those struggles before this 8-game winning streak. They were on a 6-game losing streak. How much do you read into the last 8 games of the season and that game against Colorado as something that you see transferable into the playoffs compared to maybe just the way the season ended and nothing more than that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, Rick Bonus has said many times, basically every time you ask him about that 7-0 win over the Avalanche, he goes, "Well, that wasn't their A game. We're not going to see that team in the playoffs." Like, he basically is like writing it off, like it didn't happen, because we know the Avalanche are going to be much better than that, and they will. But when you go into Colorado with basically home ice advantage on the line to beat a team 7-0, like that's not nothing. And I think it's a sign of how well this team is playing right now. I think they've refound that defensive structure that made them so good in the first half of the year. They went 35 straight games allowing 3 goals or less, which is I think they tied an NHL record with the Wild, who
I
went also
believe.
35 games. Yeah, just unbelievable stretch in those 35 games. And I think they've refound it here a little bit. Connor Hellebuck's playing some of his best hockey of the season right now. Lauren Brossoit, he's a backup goalie. He probably won't play in the playoffs, but he's playing great as well. Shut out the Dallas Stars on the road. Like that's no small feat. And I think this defensive core has bought into the Rick Bonus style. Rick Bonus even admitted a little bit that maybe they were fatigued over the course of the season. It's a hard way to play, things of that nature. And I think maybe they've found it here, lightning in a bottle, if you want to say, down the stretch. And yeah, they've tied their franchise record winning streak heading into the playoffs. It's remarkable. And I think they've refound that game, and if they can carry it into maybe game one and even game two of the playoffs and take a 2-0 series lead on the Avalanche quickly here and jump on them quick, they could really carry this momentum through the playoffs, and it could be turn into something really special.
With obviously Connor Hellebuck's been with the team for a long time. They had their run in 2018, had a little blip in 2021 where they made it to the second round, but he hasn't really in the playoffs been that Connor Hellebuck who's won the Vezina trophy and translated it specifically into the playoffs. Not that he's been awful or anything like that, but it hasn't been that same Connor Hellebuck. How much do you believe in that this year might be, you know, this year will be the year for Connor Hellebuck in terms of his playoff mastery?
Yeah, it's a great question as well, because Hellebuck, that's a talking point around here, is like his playoff numbers do dip a little bit in terms of the analytics. They do dip a tiny bit. But then Murat Ateş of The Athletic was on Winnipeg Sports Talk the other day, and he brought up a great point, basically saying you go back and watch the Vegas series where the Jets lost in 5 games last year, and like the goals are just like wide open cross seam backdoors. Like Connor Hellebuck's not, he's never saved those. He's not saving those. He's not Marc-Andre Fleury. He's not diving over and making these miraculous saves. He's a guy that thrives off of, I'm not saying he's a system goalie by any means, but he's big and boring. He's always in the right spot. And when a team in front of him is playing with as good of a structure as the Jets have, that's the combination that you've seen. So I think this year will be different for Connor Hellebuck, because this is the best defensive lineup he's ever played with. He's playing in the prime of his career. He's coming off arguably his best season. I think this season was better than his first Vezina season, in a lot of ways. And with that structure carrying into the playoffs, I think this will be different for Connor Hellebuck, who's just always in the right spot. You watch, it's so funny. You watch like his highlight reel. You'll get a shutout, and the NHL will post like, "Connor Hellebuck earned his fourth shutout. Here's his best saves of the night." And it's like a point shot, and he just swallows it up. And it's like, well, that's just what he does. Like, he doesn't make highlight reel saves. He just is in the right spot, and the puck just hits him, and he doesn't give up rebounds much at all. And when you have the defensive structure in front of it, it's money, and it's why the Jets are one of the best teams in the West.
when you talk about that structure, that's been bonuses special when it comes to a team he implements that defensive structure. But you know, some of maybe the knock against him has been his effectiveness in playoff series to make adjustments. Jared Bednar is very known for that as well. Just what do you think about maybe the coaching matchup in this series, and could that be potentially a determining factor in the outcome?
Yeah, I think it could be. And I don't know, Rick Bonus is such an interesting study because on one hand, I think he should be up for the Jack Adams. Like what he's done with this team, the defensive structure he's implemented, the fact that they're the best Canadian team, fourth in the NHL. No one really expected that at the start of the year. He should be up for the Jack Adams. Like on paper, you look at it, yes. But then over the course of the season, you look back at some of the in-game lineup decisions he made, the constant benchings of Cole Perfetti and Nikolaj Ehlers that are real head scratchers. And you look at his reluctancy at times to put that Ehlers, Scheifele, Vilardi line back together, consistently going back to Connor and Scheifele when Connor clearly, like I said, wasn't himself coming back from that injury. And it's just some head scratching decisions. So it's really interesting in that sense. In a playoff series, I'd still take the defensive structure that he's implemented over the possibility that he makes a poor in-game decision. That's really interesting though in a playoff series, because if it's tied 3-3 in game one and he benches Nikolaj Ehlers for the last 10 minutes, like that's going to be detrimental to the Jets winning that game for the final 10 minutes, right? So it's going to be really interesting because yeah, Bednar's won a Stanley Cup. He's one of the best coaches in the league. So is Rick Bonus. I'm not taking anything away from what he's done this season. Like I said, I think he should win the Jack Adams or be up for it, be top three at the absolute minimum. But those in-game decisions that are sometimes head scratchers are going to be interesting to watch over the course of a seven-game series.
My question is, let's say it's game three, the Jets are down 2-0 early in the first period. They're down 2-0 in the series, and Connor, Scheifele, Vilardi are still being hemmed in. Neil Pionk's having a bad series. Do you have the trust that he'll change from his, you know, what's got him to this place, or do you think he's going to be stuck in his ways in a lot of ways that have been successful but also might be detrimental?
Totally. Yeah. I think there comes a point where he does make changes and it ends up being for the better. Like he makes good changes. Like at the end of this Jets, the 6-game losing streak you brought up, which then sprung the 8-game winning streak, he put back together that line that everyone wanted of Ehlers, Scheifele, and Vilardi. They won the first three games. Cole Perfetti was back in the top six because Tyler Toffoli was sick. It was just a coincidence. And he played great. So he did make those decisions after a 6-game losing streak. I think the leash will be a lot shorter in a playoff series. Obviously, you can't lose 6 straight games in the playoffs, but I think if they went down 2-0, going into game three in Colorado, I think you'd see some changes. Because he does have a leash. He has a point where enough is enough. Like we've got to change something is what he kept saying after the 6-game losing streak. He's like, well, I wanted to, like, I didn't want to, but we have to change something, right? Because we lost 6 straight games. So I think that they will reach that point. And if they go down 2-0 in Winnipeg heading to Colorado, yeah, you could definitely see some changes. I don't think that happens. It's more the in-game decisions that I worry about in a sense, but yeah, I think he does have a limit where he is stuck in his ways, but he has a limit where he will make changes when things aren't going well.
How much credit does Kevin Shovel Day Off just have for turning this around? And
Oh.
I was on the train of flipping Hellebuck and Scheifele and rebuilding. And I mean, I've seen a rebuild for 7 years here in Ottawa, and it's not fun, but I thought just the course and trajectory of this team was in that fashion where it didn't make sense. They couldn't be cup contenders in the near term. And now you look at this team and you look at the young players like Brad Lambert, Chipperkov as well, obviously Rutger McGroarty coming up, Colby Barlow. Like they look set to be good, competitive for a long time. Just what does that say about Kevin Shovel Day Off as a GM in this league?
I'm not sure what's the GM of the Year award called,
Oh,
because I'm not
I
sure what
don't
it's
have it off the
called.
top of my. It should be like the Lou Lamoriello Award or something like that, but
Yeah.
I don't know it off the top of my head.
But I brought up Rick Bowness for the Jack Adams. Kevin Sheldon should be up there for the GM of the Year award. Absolutely. Everyone, I was on the train as well. I didn't think Hellebuck and Scheifele would want to re-sign here. This team had been a bubble team for the last 5 seasons. They'd maybe make the playoffs, but then be an easy out. I think those guys, I thought those guys would be, all right, I've had enough. I'm out of here. Hellebuck, I'm going to New Jersey and I'm going to go compete for a cup with them or whatever. But no, he got them to re-sign. Matching extensions on Thanksgiving Day. I'll never forget. I was about to walk into my own like rec hockey game that meant absolutely nothing. And I opened my phone and these two that was maybe a moment. You asked me off the top, a moment that might be it. I was covering the team for my first time and I missed like the biggest news drop of the decade. They re-signed. But anyways, re-signing those two guys at the same time, bringing back or flipping Pierre-Luc Dubois for Gabriel Vilardi, who's having a fantastic season. Alex Iafallo has played a lot of top 6 minutes, good in a bottom six role, got a second round pick and Rasmus Kupari in that deal as well. Traded for Sean Monahan, traded for Tyler Toffoli, both good value trades that are working out in spades for Kevin Cheveldayoff. He has really turned it around. He was like kind of the villain in this market. A lot of people wanted him gone, especially after last year when the Jets were an easy out to Vegas and they had that massive second half collapse. And then you look at the transformation of this team, and ever since that moment, he has hit every single move out of the park. Even signing Nino Niederreiter to a 3-year extension for $4 million, which is great value, great depth to have on your third line, shutdown line. He's having an incredible run here. And you talk about the prospects as well. They're going to be good for, it looks like a long time because Brad Lambert stepped in last night and looked amazing. Nikita Cherbakov scored the game winner, his first career goal. Rutger McGroarty. Everyone's here is so excited to see him come over. And that's just three of a long list. Elias Salomonsson is having a great season in with Skellefteå of the SHL. There's so many prospects that are bound to come over and join this cup ready team now in the Hellebuck window. So Jets fans are really excited here, and Kevin Cheveldayoff has a big reason to do with that.
Sometimes I always feel like the Kyle Dubas when I look at GMs and I'm like, ah, it's so simple and I don't listen to the old hockey heads. And then Kevin Cheveldayoff pulls a rabbit out of his hat. And specifically, I think all fans would agree that that PLD trade is just such a hit out of the park in so many ways. And that might be just the main catalyst for this is that you bring in a better player into your top six and then that can play defense that fits well. And is much cheaper, and it all kind
Much cheaper. And Vilardi, I tweeted this out the other day. When he was in the lineup with Sean Monahan, the Jets power play, I believe, was 30% or like
yeah.
29.5%. Then Vilardi got hurt for a month. The power play went down back to like 5 or 10%. Then Vilardi came back into the lineup. And on this 8-game winning streak, they're back up above 30%. And then he had that one goal in Nashville where he went between the legs, bar down
Oh.
over the glove side of Saros. Like he is so unbelievably talented at the side of the net. He's become one of my favorite Jets to watch just because of how special he is at the side of the net. And on the power play, he's truly a cheat code. Like you have to have a guy there, or else he's gonna burn you. If he gets the puck at the side of the net, he's making your goalie miss and he's scoring. Like it's just gonna happen.
And that's what I think with the series, like why I'm so bullish on the Jets is just because you look on paper and the special teams looks like a big gap between the two teams. But if you look at that, if you're watching the games and know that Vilardi's there, that power play's just humming. And then if you have a pretty similar power play to Colorado, your 5-on-5 game has led you the way to the playoffs and being such a successful team. You never know what happens, and I'm not trying to say the Jets are going to win in four games and it's going to be a rout. But I feel the more I think about it, and I try to take off my Jets hat, the more I think that the Jets should win the series. But the X factors are really, can you stop MacKinnon and Makar, right? At a it's not you're not never going to stop those guys, but can you just
Limit.
finish them a little bit where they're not at their peak? And if you have a guy like Adam Lowry, you feel pretty good about that, all things considered. And then the goaltending, right? And sometimes it's as simple as if Hellebuck plays the way he did during the season, Georgiev does as well. I find it Hard to believe, but the playoffs are a weird thing. I remember when the Jets beat Edmonton in a sweep. I think they had lost all their games to them that year. I could be mistaken, but they lost a lot of games to them and then flipped the switch and the Jets went 3-0 with Colorado, and you never know, it's the playoffs. But when you like, I know we've talked about this for, half an hour or so. What's your prediction in this series? I have my own, but I'll give you the floor first. And what's your prediction and why?
Well, I appreciate that. I've been saying all along that the series is going to go the distance. I like the Jets for all the reasons you brought up. The goaltending, the special teams gap really isn't as wide as it may look on paper with Gabriel Vlardy in the lineup. And then the Jets the other night scored their game winner against the Kraken with the second power play unit, Ehlers to Toffoli, and they won 4-3. So the second unit's also clicking as well. I like the Jets in six, and I could see it going seven. Because closing it out in Colorado in a must-win game for them is a difficult task, and that would be really impressive if they were able to do that. So I could see Jets in seven, but I do like the Jets regardless in this series. And I don't know. I think they jump out to a 2-0 series lead, and then from there, that's when it's like series on. Because I think home ice advantage, the Jets are absolutely rolling right now. Colorado is going to put up a fight. But I think their wins are going to come at home, and then from there, it's just there's going to be a pivotal game five. I'm mapping out the whole series here, but I think it's like 2-0, 2-2, 4-2, Jets winning in six, and then they'd be on to face the winner of Dallas and Vegas, which will be a great series, and then the second round series would be great as well. But I'm cautiously optimistic about the Winnipeg Jets, given the fact they just beat the Avalanche 7-0. They're on an 8-game winning streak. They have home ice advantage. The goaltending advantage cannot be wider. Yeah, there it is. Jets in six. That's my call. What's yours?
I completely agree, and just so the people know, we did not discuss this beforehand. I
Yeah.
have Jets in six. I guess my apprehension, and you said it so eloquently about the reasons as to why I think the Jets are favored in this matchup. Obviously, if you look at Dom decisions and other people, they might say it's a bit closer. I think there's a bit more of a gap there, just because, as you said, the depth, there's such a disparity. I think the Jets are a much deeper team. Their decor is maybe pretty even. Can maybe give the edge to the Avs, but the goaltending is just such a massive gap. But my worry, if Colorado is going to win the series, it's they sneak that first one. I every time I watch a playoff series, whether it's NHL basketball too, if you're the home team and you lose that first game, I always just feel so unnerved. And
That's a great point. Yeah.
sometimes you see them that you. Colorado wins the first game 3-2 in overtime, and then the Jets blow them out 5-1 or something like that. I think the Leafs did that last year with Tampa Bay. So sometimes it doesn't matter, but I always just get a bit freaky. You lose that first game, all the pressure's on you. Colorado has nothing to play for. They sneak that second game, and then you're 0-2 going to Colorado. So that's if I could the way I see Colorado winning this series is maybe winning that first game, or if it's split, and I don't know. That first game will be a huge
Totally.
tell for me.
I agree because also on the flip side of that, if the Jets in game one beat them 6-1, then if you're a Colorado player, you're thinking like, wow, maybe we really can't beat these guys. Like we're 0-3 against them in the season series. They just beat us by a converted touchdown a week ago. And now game one, they rolled us again. Like what do we do? They might be looking for answers. So I think if I 100% agree, couldn't agree more. If Colorado's going to win this series, they have to win that first game. Or at least split the first two, bringing it back to Colorado with a chance to go up 3-1 if they're able to win at home. They can't let the Jets go up 2-0, I think, because then the Jets, I think, in my opinion, are good enough. Hellebuck's good enough to win a game on the road. You're really playing from behind. So splitting the first two games as a lower seed, I guess it's kind of cliche to say that you want to steal one from them. But I agree. I think game one is really crucial and from an Avs perspective, splitting that first two going back home to Colorado is what you need. It's essential to winning this series.
The other thing I would say, just to add on that, is that this team, obviously, they had 110 points. They're not too streaky, but they had a five game, I think it was five game losing streak in January, February, and then they had their six game losing streak. And my worry is, when things go poorly, Does it mount up for this group that you saw last year with Vegas, right? But then when things are good, they're rolling, right? So a part of me almost feels as though it could be five games for either team, or they just things go the right way and it's the playoffs and you never know. But obviously, I think if you had to bet, it's going to be a six, seven game series. But that's where I get just a bit curious with both these teams, because they have had their these little dips where they've haven't been able to play that consistent style of hockey to not lose three, four, five games in a row. And that's what I think will be quite interesting.
Totally. I definitely agree. And another thing we didn't mention with the home ice advantage is that the Avs were the best home team in the NHL this year. They were 39-1, was their record, I believe. And then on the road, I think it was 19-16-6. So they were like mediocre on the road, below 500 if you're taking overtime losses into account. And then at home, they were the best team in the league. And Nathan MacKinnon had that super long home point streak. So just to add to what we both previously said about the Avs needing to split the first two games here or win a pivotal game five or something, they need to win a game in Winnipeg because their best chances to win are at home. They're the best home team in the league. They'll have MacKinnon out there against whoever they want. And I think that's their key to victory, but that's an even bigger reason why home ice advantage was so crucial for the Jets.
What do you think of maybe the theory that home ice isn't always the best for the Jets with the fans and it's rocking? Because if you look, if you, and I'm saying this as a fan myself, because if you look back to, if you take out 2021, which wasn't with any real fans, in 2019 they lost in six games, didn't win a home game. Last year they lost to Vegas, they didn't win a home game. Am I missing some? And then in 2018 as well, that when they beat Nashville, they lost. They won those games five and seven. They only won one game at home. So I'm not trying to. I think they have just like the best fans in the league. But I wonder if that adds some pressure, right? It gets so quiet when the other team scores a goal. There's something about that arena that I love it when it's rocking, but when it goes bad, it almost adds to it. A bit like with the Leafs, except the Leafs have very fair weather fans. But not to take too much of a shout out there, rich snobby fans, but I will. But
Fair enough. Yeah, there you go. No, but that's a great point. Like that's another talking point here in Winnipeg. That's like, the Jets haven't had great success with the whiteout. Like what are we gonna do there? I think the atmosphere is so awesome. Like I think it's the best atmosphere in the NHL or one of. It's up there for sure. One of the best atmospheres in pro sports is the Winnipeg whiteout. You got people outside. But it absolutely adds pressure. Like you said, if the Avs go up 1-0 in game one, that building's going to be dead silent after being rocking for the first 10 minutes of the game, right? Like it does add a lot of pressure. I think the first goal in every home game for the Jets is crucial. Get the crowd into it. Maybe a big hit, maybe a fight. Maybe that's why Logan Stanley's in the lineup. But getting that crowd into it, feeding off of it, and yeah, it definitely adds pressure though. 100% because yeah, if the Avs go up 2-0, that you could that game last year was a perfect example. Game three against Vegas. Vegas goes up 4-1 in the first two periods, and the building is just dead silent. No, you could hear a pin drop in Canada Life Center. And then they come out in the third period. Nino Niederreiter scores to make it 4-2 in the first 5 minutes. The crowd starts to build. Scheifele scores with about 6 minutes left. But now it's a one-goal game. The crowd is going nuts. Adam Lowry ties it with 30 seconds left, and the place just explodes. And that's like feeding off of it, using it in a good way to come back in a game was so cool. And then it went into double overtime, and they lost off of a pretty fluky bounce. But I think it does add pressure. But do I think it'll have necessarily an impact on this series? No, because I think this team is a veteran group and they'll know how to use it to their advantage and feed off of it. And if they go down 1-0 or 2-0 in game one, they have other ways that they can get the crowd into it with big hits, big fights. They're a physical team. Adam Lowry can go punch someone in the face and the crowd will be into it, right? So I think they'll be able to use it to their advantage more than maybe a 2017-18 group would have as a younger team, or maybe a more inexperienced team, if that makes sense. But yeah, I'm super pumped to just be there, be in that atmosphere.
It's gonna be crazy. I do have to ask, because my buddy Ian Mendez and wrote a piece about attendance, and obviously that's been, A
Right.
story in Winnipeg, Mark Chipman has been talking about as well. Just they have been having sellouts of late, but what do you make of maybe the conundrum or the dialogue around Jets attendance and the viability of the franchise and all those things that Winnipeggers hate to hear, but hear quite often?
It's definitely a trigger for Winnipeggers because again, they've lost a team once. I wasn't around when they lost the first team, but I will say that I think this time it's a little bit overblown. Like, yes, it's a story for sure. Like it was something that should be reported on. Gary Bettman came to town and basically reassured everyone, "Hey, you got nothing to worry about." And the reasons he laid out were the reasons I laid out originally, which is the differences between the Jets losing their team the first time and the 2.0 version of the team. The owners own the arena here. Mark Chipman owns Canada Life Centre. That wasn't the case with 1.0. True North Sports and Entertainment has invested millions upon millions into the downtown area. For them to move their number one asset out of the city makes really no sense. And since Gary Bettman came back, the Jets have, I think, sold out like all but two games. They ended up with 10 sellouts on the season. Obviously, they're going to sell out their playoff games. And yeah, I think the attendance was a concern because the team was like first in the NHL and they were still getting like 12,000 people, which is 80% capacity. And you're thinking, okay, smallest arena in the league, you're the best team and you're
Smallest.
not selling out. You're not even coming close to selling out, right? So that was the concern. That's why the stories were written. And it was definitely a story. But I think going forward, it won't be as much of a story. If that makes sense. And I think the attendance improved drastically. It definitely did. I don't think so. It did when Gary Bettman came to town and basically said, "You guys are good. We just need more businesses to step up." And maybe they did. Maybe that's what changed.
Do you think some of it was just because of the offseason, even with the Hellebuck and Scheifele extensions? It still felt like I felt it as a fan that here we go again, another decent but not
With the
great
same
team.
core. Yeah.
And I always believe I say this. I think I'm stealing this from Bill Simmons, so forgive me, but the way you sell and a product, especially the NHL, is with hope. And it didn't feel like there was a lot of hope. It just felt they're muddied, right? And
100%,
the
yeah.
team I liken them to is maybe a bit like the Islanders, a bit different, but they're good, but they're never gonna win the cup, right? Sorry, Patrick Waugh, right? But so I wonder if now there definitely feels that hope with fans that there wasn't before. And I think moving forward, like I think Winnipeg could go through a rebuild. It just has to be sold the right way, right? And I mean, now you don't have to worry too much. You have Brad Lambert, Marker, McGrory, Barlow, all those guys we've named that are those young, exciting players coming up. But I think that might have been the case a little bit.
I agree. And I think even if you do go through a rebuild, as long as you have young, exciting players, ticket sales won't be an issue. Like if Brad Lambert is the top line center through the Jets rebuild, I don't think attendance will be an issue because he's like a high flying player that makes crazy plays in transition. Like he's kind of worth the price of admission if he hits his ceiling as a prospect, right? So you could go through a rebuild in that sense. But I think that definitely had a lot to do with it. They had that like kind of bad play. I was going to say pathetic. I'll say pathetic playoff series against
What did
Vegas.
Bonus say? What did he call it after that game?
There's like no pushback. He said pushback like eight times because the team didn't push back. So yeah, they had the pushbackless series against Vegas. And then they had the off season where, yeah, you weren't sure if Scheifele and Hellebuck were going to come back. They signed them. Okay, great. Everyone's probably thinking they're going to be another mediocre bubble team and get bounced in round one. Okay, whatever. And then you're the number one team in the league. You add Sean Monahan, Tyler Toffoli. Hellebuck's going to win another Vezina. I think the attendance climbed as the season went on for sure. But yeah, I think even if they were to go through a rebuild, I was thinking about that the other day with in regards to attendance. I think as long as you have like a Rutger on your team who like just exudes personality, or a Brad Lambert who is one of the most entertaining on ice players that the Jets might have in a long time, I think that you ticket sales could be just fine through a rebuild, but Hellebuck's here for the next 7 years, and I can't see the Jets rebuilding while they have Connor Hellebuck
For
under
sure.
contract. So
Yeah.
I
Well,
don't think that'll
it's
be an issue.
reading
Yeah.
Ian, he's a great friend of mine. Just his piece, like Chicago went up leaps and bounds in terms of their attendance. They're arguably just as bad a team in many ways, but
Yeah.
they have someone named Connor Bedard who is, as you said, worth the price of admission. So I think that's definitely part of it. I feel like we've gone off track a little bit, but I want to ask you just the million-dollar question. What's that thing with on Jets broadcast that you can win? Is it if they score 5 goals, you win $1 million
Yeah,
from
it's like so. I think it's
Sobeys? I want to
Sobeys
say
or
Sobeys.
Savon.
Save on
Savon scored
Tweets.
win, maybe. Yeah, I don't know,
Did
but yeah, the player scores five goals,
Laine
it's
get
$1 million.
5 goals?
Yes, and at that point, it was Safeway score and win, and someone won $1 million because of Patrick Laine. Yeah,
That's crazy. Yeah,
yeah,
that's what I need to put in my money
yeah.
into. But just with that, like, how far do you think this team goes? Can they win the cup in your mind? Is this a legitimate cup contender that can? Like, do you believe they could win the Stanley Cup? That's what I'm asking you, Connor, on the spot.
Yes. On the spot, I think yes. And I think in many ways that second round, if they were to beat Colorado, the second round against Dallas, presumably, or Vegas, I guess if Vegas beats Dallas, that would in many ways be the Western Conference Finals in my eyes. And the Jets, I think with goaltending, with the best goaltending in the league, if that holds, they're going to be on not unstoppable, but they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And they'll have a goaltending advantage over everyone in the West for sure. Maybe if they meet Vancouver, it'll be a little bit more even in the Western Conference Finals. But you saw how far Florida could go last year as an 8 seed when they got good goaltending in the playoffs because Bobrovsky just like
Just
leaned up in his chair for 2 weeks and it was unbelievable. So I think if that goaltending holds and Connor Hellebuyck, that defensive structure remains, I absolutely think they could win the Stanley Cup. It's crazy to think about in that sense. But they're the second best team in the West. Why not, right? I think Dallas is a wagon. I think if I had to pick someone to go to the Cup final, it would be Dallas in the West and maybe Carolina in the East. But I think the Jets, if they were to beat Dallas, if they gave them a fight, if they took it to a game seven, won on a fluky overtime winner or something, I could see them going to the Cup final. And then in the East, beating whoever's there. And at that point in the Stanley Cup Finals too, I feel like that's just kind of a battle of who's the healthiest and who's the least fatigued. Like if a team sweeps the Western Conference Finals or wins in five and the other team goes to war for 7 games, like I think that really decides the Cup Final more than pure roster talent would. But with Connor Hellebuyck in net, I think they can win the Stanley Cup for sure.
My thing that I like about this team, and obviously I think obviously if they play Dallas, that's going to be a huge matchup. Even Vegas, I mean, those two
Yeah.
teams are wagons. It's not. I still worry about Edmonton. I'm a believer of this team. It feels quite different, especially just
Okay.
that they've been good defensively. Obviously, Skinner could throw a curveball like he did last year and play bad in the playoffs, but I do believe in that team. I think that's the team that gets out of that side of the bracket, and
I agree.
that always scared McDavid. I still have flashbacks of watching 2021, and I know they swept them, but it felt like they lost in four, just with how my heart was racing. But what I do like about this team is if you look at Vegas last year, they were deep at, and maybe they didn't have the same decor, but they arguably have a better goaltender. But like, let's say, I don't know, Toffoli gets injured. You have Cole Perfetti right there. Like it's, you have Kapari, you have Gustafsson, you have all these guys that could make a huge imprint on the series. On D, you have Miller, Schmidt. Like in the playoffs, there's going to be injuries, right? And this team feels really prepared for, we get to the third round. We have two, three guys out. We're still rolling because we're so deep. And if you look at Colorado, for example, like they lose one or two guys, it's pretty thin. Dallas is a wagon. I'm not too worried, but their decor still doesn't scare me. But their forwards are just waves. They're very similar to the Jets, but I
For
think
sure.
they're well positioned in many ways to make a deep playoff run if they're able to get there, just because of the depth that they have within their roster.
I agree. Yeah, that organizational depth that they preach all the time and the moves that they made, Sean Monahan and Tyler Toffoli, pushed some really talented players out of the lineup. And if they were to sustain a few injuries, I'd have no worries. I think they're a really deep team and they could sustain that. And then if Connor Hellebuyck is playing well, They're as dangerous as anyone in the West. And yeah, that second round series against Dallas is giving, it's already giving me like Jets Predators vibes
I
from
was gonna say,
2017-18.
yeah.
Yeah, like the two clear-cut best teams in the West going at it. And then obviously the Jets win and go on and lose in the Western Conference Finals. But that in the regular season, those were the best two teams. Maybe history will repeat itself and it'll be Dallas Jets. Jets will win and then the Oilers will win in the Western Conference Finals. That would be an absolute dream Western Conference Finals for me. I don't know about you picking like the final four, what would be your ideal matchup, but Jets Oilers
Would be
with a
awesome.
trip to the cup on the line, I think would be unbelievable. Two Canadian teams. Yeah.
I'd rather, for my own sake, it be Jets Canucks, because then I feel like they'd win.
Canucks,
But maybe
yeah.
that's just my
Fair enough,
selfishly. I
yeah.
don't. I'm not a. I think Vancouver can beat the Predators, but I don't see them going too far in the playoffs. But we'll see. You never know. Okay, so we'll do a prediction time just with the Jets. You talked about how you can see that they went. Win the cup, but we won't go through every series because I've had you on long enough. But what is your Stanley Cup prediction as we sit here today, Connor, on the eve of the playoffs?
I am going to say Dallas versus Carolina is my cup final. I don't know if that's a chalk pick. Like, I don't know if those, I guess Dallas is probably the favorite in the West. Carolina, maybe New York, maybe Florida. But I really loved the addition of Jake Guentzel for Carolina at the time. I actually did a trade deadline podcast right after they made that move, and this was the cup final I then predicted. My preseason one was Oilers Devils. So
Wow,
we just won't talk
Devils.
about that.
I was high on the Devils, so I would have made that mistake. I don't know if I picked them to win the cup or to make the cup, but I was high on them, like a lot of
Yeah,
people
I
were.
think they had a lot of injuries and their goaltending. I underestimated how bad their goaltending was. But anyways, my post trade deadline cup prediction was Dallas versus Carolina. I'm gonna stick with that. I think both those teams are loaded, they're deep. They're defensively strong. Carolina, Frederick Anderson came back and has been a really good goaltender down the stretch here. And if Dallas can get good goaltending out of Jake Ottinger, they don't have a weakness. And I think they're the best team in the West. So I'll take Dallas over Carolina in the cup final in six. Call it.
Yeah, I like that. I still, there's a part of me with Carolina that it's like, show me. Like, I just,
Yes, totally. I know,
but
I
they
get
do
that.
look different. I just, their goaltending, man. I know they're
Yeah.
good, but it's tough. I mean, they should win their first round against the Islanders, although that will be a tough matchup for them because the Islanders are so good defensively. If I had to, I say Oilers. I just feel it that way.
This is
Even
it.
though
All
I
right.
think
Yeah.
on paper you'd definitely say Dallas and probably the Jets, and you could even argue in many ways Colorado is a better team. I don't like the Kings, Canucks, or Nashville, even though Nashville was hot. The East I find is so wide open. I don't have any real gauge. I could see the Leafs making the finals, honestly. I don't predict it.
Wow.
I don't predict it, but I feel there's a lot of Florida last year where you look at their decor and you're like, what? And then, although now their decor in retrospect looks much better because Forsling and
Totally.
Montour became awesome. But I really don't have a good gauge. I'll say Oilers versus Florida, and Oilers win in six. That's my
Okay.
Connor McDavid his ring. He needs
I'd
one.
be up for that. I do want to see Connor McDavid win a championship. Like, that would just be, he has to win one. I don't want to live through the Connor McDavid era and never see him win a cup or play in the cup finals in that. Like, I think that has to happen at some point. I want to ask you if you had a sleeper team on either side of the bracket, who would a team that is underrated and you think could go on a sneaky run. I guess you just said the Leafs. That would be considered.
I'm gonna go out on a limb. I'm gonna go Tampa.
That's what I was gonna say.
I
Yeah,
think
Tampa.
I don't love it, but in the East, I just don't believe in the Islanders or Washington. In the West, maybe Nashville. I don't love. I really
No.
can't. It's hard for me to believe it. Maybe LA, but I don't believe it either.
Maybe Vegas. Like, they're
Vegas could.
much better than their record. So I think if they get through Dallas, then
But
they'll be the best
is that
team
a
standing.
sleeper though? Like, I don't think
Right,
I'm
because they're
sleeping
the cup.
on.
They just won the
Yeah.
cup. Yeah. I think Tampa, like, if they get good goaltending out of Vasilevsky, I think they could really,
What's
and they
interesting?
beat Florida in round one, they could.
And that the interesting thing is that you can tell the attrition of a salary cap with that team. Like you lose
Yeah,
Gerald
totally.
Coleman, Gord, Kilhorn,
Yeah.
Summer.
Totally.
That's the one thing. Obviously, they lost Sergachev as well, which was a huge blow. So they just know how to win in the playoffs. They should have beat the Leafs last year. They really should. They were the better team in that series. Kucherov is a menace. But man,
Yeah.
that Florida Tampa series will just be.
So much fun. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm gonna be watching more of the Leafs one just because it's the Leafs, but that series might even be the best series. I think it's probably that or Vegas Dallas, I think it's probably the best series in the first round. Yeah. Okay.
I agree.
Awesome.
I agree.
Awesome, Connor. Well, I hope that you're a very busy man until like June 20th or whenever the
Me
Stanley
too. Me
Cup
too.
ends, and I love to see the whiteout and everything out there in Winnipeg. And I call myself a quasi Manitoban and Winnipegger just with all my family out there. So I really hope for your sake it happens. Is there anything else that you want to plug along this ride? You have so many things going for Winnipeg Sports Talk, the Level Flight podcast, Hockey Writers. Just plug yourself and let everyone know where to find you.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. Winnipeg Sports Talk, we're going to be doing post game shows after every single playoff game. Me and Michael Remus and I, will be doing the post game shows. So tune into those. Level Flight Podcast, we go live every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock Central. This upcoming Sunday, the Jets are playing Sunday. So it's going to serve as like a pregame show. It's going to be so much
Oh,
fun. So tune in
awesome.
for that. Yeah, that'll be great. And then on the writing side of things, the Hockey Writers, I'm going to have a ton of gamers on the Jets Av series. I'm going to have a huge preview out hopefully early tomorrow morning on the series, what to watch for, which teams have the advantage. And yeah, that's all the work I'm going to be doing over the playoffs among a million other things, but like you said, I hope I'm very busy till the end of June.
Well, maybe by the end of June you'll have a little bit of beard. You'll feel
Yeah,
grizzled. You'll be
exactly.
a
Yeah.
veteran. You'll be wrapping up your rookie season, and
Rookie season,
you're
yeah.
getting used to the 100 games that every Jets
A
player.
grind. It's a grind.
It
It's a
is.
grind,
I mean,
man.
it's funny. Like, just I'm sure you know this. Just talking to some of the younger players in the NHL, like with the Sens, and talking to like Greg, Ridly Greig, or JBD, and they're like, man, 82 is different. Like, it just.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
for you, I don't know what I'd be doing if I had another, 10 to 20 games left. I'd be absolutely gassed, but it'll be a lot of fun. And
Second wind.
everyone check out your stuff. And thanks so much, Connor, for taking the time and doing this. And as a fan, go Jets.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.